Les colloques du Collège de France.
Okay, I would like to start by thanking Jean-Jacques. Thank you very much for making me think about time. We don't think about biological time enough in the lab. I would like to tell you today about different biological clocks which are ticking in our body during our very early development. We've heard about the development of the brain, and I will not surprise you in telling you that all of the cells of your brain come from one single cell at the very beginning, which is called the zygote. And so we are interested in the early development of mammals, and this is a mouse embryo that you can put under a microscope during the first 5 days of its development. And what you will see is that this single cell will start undergoing cleavage divisions, which are divisions without cell growth, until you have like 2, 4, 8 cells. And when the embryo reaches 8-cell stage, it will start to change shape, and it will start to sculpt a specific structure, which is called the blastocyst. The blastocyst is the structure that you can see right now. This is the object that will implant the mammalian embryo into the maternal uterus. And this is what we are interested in understanding in the lab, how the mammalian embryo formed this structure, how it forms the blastocyst. And what you could see on this movie were a series of steps. So on the top, we have the cleavage divisions, where you have just the cell being cut in half, and this initial volume is just cut in half, quarters, eighth, and so on and so forth, without much shape changes. And then eventually, the embryo will start to form this blastocyst, which you can see on the bottom right. The blastocyst has this specific structure where you have two tissues, the purple one called the trophectoderm, which envelopes the rest of the embryo. Inside this envelope, there's a fluid-filled lumen. It's just water mostly, which is called the blastocoel. And there's also a cluster of pluripotent stem cells, which are in blue, which are called the inner cell mass. And all of the cells of your body come from this inner cell mass. The purple cells, the trophectoderm, their job is to attach to the uterus and to contribute to the extra embryonic tissues of the placenta only. To make this structure, the blastocyst, the embryo is undergoing different shape changes, and I would like to discuss them with you now. So we have three steps to form the blastocyst. The first one is called compaction, and it takes place at the 8-cell stage. And you can see on this movie, this mouse embryo is becoming more compact, and that's because the cells are pulling themselves together. They spread their cell-cell contact, and they come together. The second step is the formation of inner cells and outer cells, and that is something which is happening at the 16-cell stage in the mouse embryo. And you can see this magenta cell, which is slowly going inside the embryo and is completely surrounded by its neighboring cells. It is no longer in contact with the outside medium. And this different positioning of cells, either in contact with the medium or only in contact with other cells, this is essential for the differentiation into the two lineages I discussed, the trophectoderm that will make the placenta and the inner cell mass, which will make all of the cells of the mammalian body. This is a very important decision that is made at this point, and this is dictated by the position of cells. So understanding how this position is obtained is crucial for understanding where our cells come from. And then the last step is the formation of a lumen. It's a fluid-filled cavity, and it forms here on the bottom part of this embryo. And as you can see, highlighted in this peculiar embryo, which has two different colors, the formation of this lumen forms an axis. Initially, the embryo is a sphere with no particular radial, it is a radially symmetric structure, but at the end of the process, you have an axis with many cells on the top and no cells on the bottom. And this axis is the very first axis that we have. And you can see in your body today that you have at least three axes, right? The anterior-posterior, dorsal-ventral, and left-right axis. And that's very important for your body plan. And this is the very first axis that forms, and this corresponds to the dorsal-ventral axis. So understanding how the lumen is positioned is very important for our own development. Okay, so let's go quickly over the three different steps, which take place over about 3 days. It's a very slow process. So the first one is called compaction. And so this is a study from the lab of François Jacob, who also studied early mammalian development. He studied many different things. In the lab of François Jacob, Rolf Kammler in the 70s discovered the very first cell-cell adhesion molecule, which they baptized ovomorulin for the protein that makes the transition from an ovo, like grape-like structure, into a morula, so something which is more like a mulberry or a raspberry, if you want. And so this protein is called now E-cadherin or cadherin 1, it changes name all the time. And so this adhesion molecules it sticks the cells together. And if you don't have it, then you don't compact. So having adhesion molecules is essential if you want to hold together. And actually, during the compaction process, if you try to separate cells, what you will see is that the more compacted the cells are, the stickier the cells are, the more strength holds them together. And this is something that we can measure in the lab, and we can clearly see that there is more and more adhesion strength between cells during compaction. But this is not what drives compaction. Compaction is not mediated by having more and more glue on the cells. Instead, what happens is that the cells are pulling onto each other, and they pull each other more and more. And you can measure this using a different technique, which is also based on micropipette aspiration. What you can do is you can poke the cell surface, and what you see is that over time, cell surface will become more and more tense. Cells pull harder and harder on their neighbors, that bring them together, make the contact larger and stickier because they are larger. And the way cells pull onto each other is with their muscle, literally. In all cells, muscles, of course, are specialized contractile cells, but all of the cells of our body are able to contract to some extent, and that is with their actomyosin cytoskeleton. We will look into this in a bit more detail later on, but what we can see is that if you mutate one of the myosin, one of the motor that drives those contraction, and so this is the embryo labeled in green on the bottom, those embryos which cannot contract properly, they will not compact because they cannot pull on their neighbor as effectively as you can see on the surface tension measurement. So compaction is mediated by this increased contractility which pulls cells together. Then cells will internalize, and if you track the cells that will internalize and measure how much force those cells produce as they become internalized, again using micropipette aspiration, what you see is that the cell which is labeled in yellow, orange, which stays at the surface, is actually generating less forces than the cell which is becoming internalized. The cells which become internalized, they internalize because they pull stronger on the neighbor. So they pull stronger, they cover themselves with the neighbor. And if you interfere with the ability of cells to pull on the neighbors, for example, again, using this myosin mutant, you can actually control the internalization of a cell that is stronger than its neighbors. The green cell here is stronger than the purple cell. It pulls its way into the embryo. And that's what decides whether a cell will be part of the placenta or part of the embryo. And the last step is the formation of a lumen. So you need to accumulate fluid into the embryo. And this is how it happens. On the bottom left, you will see a big cavity appearing. But before the cavity appeared, I hope you could appreciate that there were many small cavities a bit everywhere throughout the embryo. So fluid actually comes and accumulates in between cells throughout the embryo, and then all of the fluid is somehow moved, pushed to one side. And this is again contractility of the cells, which is able to push onto the fluid. And it does so using specific protrusions, which are called inverse blebs. I will not go into the details, but basically the cells are able to contract onto the fluid and squeeze it from one side of the embryo to the other. And if you pattern the ability of cells to contract, and you make green cells which are not contracting and purple cells which are very contracting, then the purple cells will be able to push the fluid away from them and determine where the fluid will accumulate and form the first axis of symmetry of the embryo, which determines the dorsoventral axis of the mouse. So this was a bit quick. This is the major focus of the lab. And what I would like to highlight is that contractility is everywhere. This is what sculpts the embryo. And the embryo is sculpted on the time course of several days. And those three processes which I mentioned today, in the mouse, each of them take about 10 hours. 10 hours for cells to pull each other together during compaction, 10 hours for cells to pull themselves in during the internalization of the cells, and then about 10 hours again to push the fluid onto one side of the embryo. And now that I mentioned about this slow biological clock, the biological clock of morphogenesis, I would like to tell you about a different tempo, which is happening simultaneously during development. So let's go a little bit more into how contractility works. How is cell contractility functioning? So contractility is coming from the action of the actin cytoskeleton, which is here represented in red fibers. Those red fibers are dynamic. They grow and shrink constantly. They are also attached to one another by what are called crosslinkers. And so those crosslinkers, they kind of jellyfy this network. And then there are myosin motors, which are able to pull on the filaments and contract them, just like in your muscles. In a regular cell, usually those fibers are not as aligned as in a muscle, so the organization is different, but the principle is the same. You have a network that is contracted by myosin motors, and this puts the network under tension, just like you would just flex your muscle. A good way to visualize this tension is to cut the network. If you take an object and you put it under tension and you cut it, it will snap. And so this is what you can do actually in this zebrafish cell. This is the actin network, and if you cut it with a laser, it snaps open. And so this is revealing visually the tension. What you can appreciate as well is that this network is under tension, but it also regenerates itself. It is turning over constantly. And in about 10 to 20 seconds, this network is rebuilt. So if you look at the image, initially it looks like this network is static, but it's an illusion. It's actually constantly turning over. It is a very dynamic network. And so you have those contractions which are happening over timescales of tens of hours, but this is mediated by something which is constantly turning over on timescales of seconds to minutes. And this has some profound consequences on how contractility happens. Contractility is actually not a steady process. It can be a pulsatile phenomenon. And this is something which was discovered in the late 2000s in the fly embryo. So we are now looking at a fly embryo, at the back of a fly embryo. And what you can see are cells, which are part of a tissue, which is called the amniocerosa, which are oscillating, fluctuating in shape. This tissue with those large cells is going to disappear. It will take a few tens of minutes for this tissue to disappear. And this is done by contractions. The cells are contracting their surface until they squeeze themselves and disappear. But this is not a steady contraction. These are pulsatile contractions with a fairly well-defined period of about 180 seconds. And those contractions are mediated by, again, the actomyosin cytoskeleton. You can see actin and myosin on the movie below. And you can see one pulse of contraction where you see filaments which are gathered together and accumulating in one position as the cell is shrinking its apex. And then the pulse is over, the cell relaxes a little bit, and then a new pulse comes, and then it relaxes, and a new pulse comes. And what has been proposed at the time of the discovery of those periodic contractions is that every contraction is reverting a little bit, but not completely. Some of the contraction remains, and it is acting like a ratchet that makes the cell eventually contract completely its apical side. So the idea would be that shape changes in animals are mediated by actomyosin contractility, but contractility is not a steady movement. Instead, it's a kind of pulsatile movement. That's kind of the idea. And this is conserved in fly, in fish, in frog, in starfish. This has been observed and described in many different organisms. And those pulses, they vary in period between 60 and 200 seconds, depending on the species and the tissue. And they make sometimes quite impressive phenomena. And I would like to share with you this movie from the lab of Bill Bement, which I believe is, to me, one of the most beautiful and amazing movie that I ever got to see. So be ready, please. So this is now a very large cell. The fly cell I showed you before was just a few microns in size. This one is a millimeter. It's gigantic. But it's still able to form those pulses of contraction. But because it's so big, it forms so many. And please watch this. We are looking now at a frog oocyte undergoing periodic contractions. So as you can see, you form hundreds of Turing-like waves which propagate at the cell surface. And if you focus on each of those single events, this is just one tiny pulse that just propagates and forms those beautiful waves that draws those amazing patterns on the surface of this frog oocyte. So this is the same phenomenon, just scaled up to a massive size. And so the process of those Turing waves is something that has been described in many other tissues, many other contexts. The way it works is that you have an activator and an inhibitor. The activator activates its own inhibitor. The inhibitor has some kind of delay or travels faster, and then you can make some pattern-like processes, and you can very well simulate this kind of wave that you could see in this frog oocyte. I will just briefly mention this because this will be important later on. The activator and the inhibitor of those contractions is a part of a pathway which is called the Rho pathway. And so Rho is a small GTPase that can travel between the cytoplasm and the plasma membrane, and its inhibitor will dislocate it from the plasma membrane, eventually inactivating it. And basically this oscillation of Rho activation inhibition eventually leads to the activation and inhibition of actomyosin contractility. So actomyosin contractility is one of the effectors of this pathway which can pulse. Okay, so to summarize this part about periodic contractions, we see periodic contraction, which could be potentially sculpting the embryo not in a steady way, but in a pulsatile fashion. The period of oscillation is between 60 and 200 seconds, depending on the species and the tissue. And this has been studied mostly in fast developing animals. We're talking about worm, fly, frog, fish. They all develop in max a day or two, right? And the worm is less than a day even, right? So these are fast developing animals which change shape in minutes to hours and make those pulses. So you just have a few of those pulses. Now the question is, if you take a slow developing animal, like a mouse, for example, which takes days to develop, will it have just, you know, way more oscillations at the same tempo, or will it slow down its tempo? And so this is an easy question to answer. And so the thing you need to do is you need to stop imaging mouse development on a time scale of days. You need to image it at a very fast pace. And so this is the only thing that we needed to do. And so this is compaction. If you image every 15 minutes, but now if you take a 15 minutes long movie where you image every 5 seconds, this is what you see. You see rhythmic movement of the cells with a period of about 80 seconds. So the tempo seems to be conserved between the fast developing organism and the mouse. It just seems that you just have more of them. And so those periodic contractions, they will go on for tens of hours, for days even. Those periodic contractions, they are indeed just like in the fly, in the starfish oocyte and the frog oocyte, mediated by actomyosin contraction, which can travel. You can actually visualize this if you image actin, which is here in green. And what you can see here is a wave of actin that travels from left to right on this projection of a spherical cell. This wave is actually going around the cell. It goes around the cell every 80 seconds. It's difficult to visualize because this is a 3D movie which is projected here. So we can do then a little trick to visualize this more effectively, which is that we, instead of working on the whole embryo, we dissociate the cells from the embryo and we study the single cells. And this is then how it looks. You have a single cell which is undergoing periodic waves of contraction which turn around the cell every 80 seconds. On the left is actin. I hope you can see that there are some actin accumulation traveling around the cell. The middle is a plasma membrane that you can see deforming, and it goes on and on and on for tens of minutes at a very regular pace of about 80 seconds. You can actually now, because this is a simpler setting, you can actually analyze this easier. You can segment the cell outline, compute the local curvature. Blue is for flat region, red is for curved region, and you can then build what is called a chemograph, where you basically just cut the cell perimeter, you stretch it over time, and what you see are the stripes, which are very evenly positioned. This is how periodic the system is. You could build a clock with this. And on the bottom is the actin cytoskeleton, which is in perfect synchrony with the deformation. And those waves of contraction, they travel about 80 at 0.8 micron per second. This is about 10 times faster than a migrating cell. It's a very fast phenomenon. And I hope also what you can appreciate is it's not one wave, it's two waves that kind of run after each other at either pole of the cell. Okay, so this is happening during compaction, and this is also actually happening during the internalization process. So if you take those cells and you dissociate them, if you image them now back on the long timescale, the timescale of development, which is tens of hours, what you see is that this single cell, which is able to make those waves of contraction, it will divide into two. One cell will internalize inside the other one, and then it will divide once again. And now you have four cells, two inside, which are easy to see, the green ones, and then two outside, which are a bit more difficult to see, and a small lumen. So it forms a mini blastocyst, a mini embryo. And actually, if you look into more details into the structure, it recapitulates all of the features of a regular embryo until that point. And what happened is that this cell, which you just saw dividing, it actually divides in a specific way, which is called an asymmetric division. The eight-cell stage has a domain that you can see on the left on this electron micrograph. It's a little island of material that is a bit different. This island is labeled in pink or magenta on the right-hand side, and this cell will divide, and when it divides, only one of the two daughter cells will get it. And now if you look at the behavior of those different domains when it comes to periodic contraction, you can see different behaviors. So here on the left is a cell which has this pink domain on the top, and when you look at the contraction, it doesn't seem to contract much. It's a domain that is not very contractile. This cell will divide, the domain will be given to only one of the two cells. During the division, there's no periodic contractions. And when the division is over, one cell will start to contract a lot, and the cells that inherited this pink domain, the one on the bottom, does not undergo periodic contractions. So you now have a different behavior between those two cells, one which is very contractile and the other one which is not very contractile. And the cell that is continuing this rhythmic dance is the one that will become internalized. The other one, which stopped the contraction, will be to the outside of the embryo and will be part of the placenta. And so eventually it just sacrifices itself for the survival of the dancing one. And so what I wanted to say is that we have this long-term morphogenesis, we have this short-term periodic contractions. They are somehow connected. Those periodic contractions are happening at the same time. And the question now that I would like to address in the next coming 5 minutes is when do they appear and what controls them? Okay, so we have seen eight-cell stage embryos, and you can see another one on the bottom right, and you can see that they undergo periodic contraction. You can see that the four-cell stage also shows some periodic contractions. It is a bit more difficult to perceive in the two-cell stage and the zygote. And what you can do is you can use an image analysis process, which is called particle imaging velocimetry, which somehow detects short-term movements. And then you can color-code them with those arrows and so on and so forth. What this reveals is that if you look at the eight-cell stage on the right-hand side, and if you look at one of those vectors, you can see that the velocity of the vector is going up and down. You have clear oscillations. This is also true for the four-cell stage. And you can actually detect them very nicely at the two-cell stage. It's a bit more difficult at the zygote stage, but it is there. You can actually detect it. And if you now look at the period of oscillation at those different stages, what you see is that the zygote stage has a period of about 150 seconds. And then the rhythm of the contraction speeds up to reach 80 seconds at the eight-cell stage. With each cleavage division, it looks like the rhythm is accelerating. And I told you this was a wave that goes around the cell. So if you just make the cell smaller, you would expect that it just goes quicker. And so we wanted to see whether cell size per se is what controls the period of oscillation. And so for this, we manipulated cell size, and we did it in different ways. We can fuse cells together to just make them bigger, or fragment them gently, mechanically. And then you can make cells of very different sizes, from 30 micron radius to about 10 in radius. And lo and behold, you make this, you make those giant cells, the small cells, and then the period stays exactly the same. So even though size and oscillation period are very nicely correlated, this is not what controls the periodic contraction. Very disappointing, but that's just how it is. So what else then? What we saw as well, which was changing with development, is not just the size of the cell, but also the surface mechanics. If you probe the surface tension of those cells at the zygote stage, you have about 1,500 picogram per micrometer, and then it goes down all the way down to about 200 picogram per micrometer for the eight-cell stage. So it looks like cells are becoming softer and softer. And this is a surface wave that deforms the cell surface, right? So what if the cells are just too stiff to be visually deformed? Maybe the propagation of this mechanical wave is somehow impeded by a substrate that would be too rigid. So we can then go back to this organization of the cytoskeleton and the Rho pathway that controls this structure. And so this Rho pathway, which oscillates, it controls the structure, it also controls the turnover. So maybe this is like a meeting point for a pathway that would control both the dynamics and the mechanics. And so you can interfere with axon cytoskeleton, and this can modulate the speed of the contraction. And this is just a proof principle that to say that if you interfere with actin dynamics, it will affect both the mechanics and the oscillation period. And then you can go into a bit of a fine analysis. And so in the fly, there are proteins which regulate actin dynamics, which are called formin. And if you interfere with formin, it can interfere with the pulse contraction in the fly embryo. And when you look at the expression of formins in mouse development, I'm almost finished, what we see is that some formins, formin 2 and 3, they decrease their level during the zygote to 8-cell transition. And if you interfere now with the expression of this formin, not by making it go away, but by maintaining it for longer than it should, what you see if you increase the level of formin is that the period of contractions are delayed. So this is as far as we could go for now. We are still looking into the molecular regulation of the oscillation period of those period of contraction. But basically, to conclude now, what I would like to say is that we have this very powerful engine of animal morphogenesis, that is contractility. It is conserved in evolution from the worm to humans. And it is not just a steady contraction. This is a more dynamic process that needs to be studied at multiple timescales. And how those multiple timescales are connected is something which is still very unclear. And it is only by understanding what controls those different timescales that we will be able to understand how they are connected. With this, I am finished. This is a lab currently, and this is the lab at the time we were studying those period contractions. This was a project that was mostly led by Özge Özgür, the one with the hat. And I thank you very much for your attention.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.